Been a long time since we spoke to you out there, somewhere around 2019, I believe. The last time I did a podcast, it's not that I haven't had a lot of things to say in between that time. It's just that making the time or having the time or the luxury of time is not something that you always have available. But now I've decided that, you know, speaking out is powerfully something that we all as individual, due to the 14th Amendment, should utilize. And especially now where we have an opportunity to podcast or, you know, different platforms that you can utilize. I started off years ago wanting to be a voiceover artist, but I'm a natural person who knows how to speak and articulate myself. And voiceovers in the industry, no matter who I spoke with, everyone was indicating that I had an accent. A black accent is what they was really insinuating. And I had to work on that black accent and make it more of a white accent that white people would predominantly accept my voice and without the blackness in it. And if you look at the current state of voiceover artists, there's a white girl that was just on Facebook saying how she makes $15,000 after working 40, 50, 60 hours. She makes thousands of dollars now because her white voice is pretty much is what is accepted in the white world of voiceovers. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a few people in the voiceover world that are people of color, but very few. And very few of them stand out on the TV networks or any of the networks. Recently, to give you an example, you know, I speak out a lot and I take the sides of the people who are the least of us. And a lot of times that comes with vindictive behaviors. Bank of America called me out the clear blue sky and said my account was going to be closed, and that I agreed, like every person that has an account with Bank of America, that, you know, my account could be closed if the bank decided that for whatever reasons they could close it arbitrarily if they want, whatever reason. But you know how that goes. And so anytime a Bank of America is going to call a black man and say that we're going to close your account, come on now. We know what that's about. Also, simultaneously, my Facebook account was compromised, and I had a Bank of America account on that. I don't know what the coincidence was, but someone called me. I called someone and looked up Facebook customer service, and I called someone, and they said it was with Facebook customer service. And he proceeded to tell me, after trying to hack what I eventually could demise that I could eventually see that he was trying to hack my account by asking me my personal information. And Bank of America was one of the accounts that he, through his calling me in contact, I found out they had closed my account. He was trying to get into that account. So, you know, you have all these different encounters. And then this voice that was on the phone, after he couldn't get into the Bank of America account, and I told him, well, you know, that account is closed. And then he started to try to get into my Capital One accounts. I was like, hold it. Who are you? Then he started saying, you need to get out of America. You need to go back to Ghana or some South Africa, African country, but you need to get out of America. And then him and I really got into a fuss because I was like, who are you to tell me to get out of America? And then, you know, he was really a racist, ranting. And I'm not going to deny, I got kind of racist also, because ain't no way in the world somebody going to sit up and tell me because of I'm speaking out and saying what I feel like I'm going to say that I should get out of America, go back to Ghana and all this kind of stuff. You know, I don't know what Trump juice these people are drinking, you know what I mean? But they better be very careful, because some people don't even know who they speaking to or who they talking to or who they messing with. And that is the truth. Some people really don't know. You know, when you speak out and you say something to somebody, you don't know who you're dealing with. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate compliments and stuff like that. When people, you know, applaud, you know, my articulation of things that I say. But when you're going to try to put me down and be condescending and say things to me about get out of America, as hard as black people have worked all their life and this place, a lot of these millionaires and stuff like that got free labor. And don't forget yesterday that black people was basically slaves. And those slaves basically did lots of things for people who are millionaires today. And those millionaires went on and they raised their plantations, they raised their families. Their families inherited the millions and riches of dollars in the land that black people worked and different things like that. And they discarded black people virtually. And this is where you see the ghettos and different things all across the country where blacks just navigated. You know, they just kind of, some of them, some black people couldn't even, they couldn't even go on their own. They were so dependent on the master that they asked the master, "Can I stay here, master?" Even when even though they was supposedly freed, freed how? I don't know, but that's what the word that was used, free. Free means many things to different people, but people who still have to go ask white people for a job, or people who still have to depend on white people for a living, are they free? Well, I'll wait. You figure that one out. So free is what it means to who? You know, when black people were so-called freed as slaves. Like I said, in this world, when you still have to look up to a white person, a bank to give you money, to have a business, and how many banks are actually giving black people that money? You know, how many banks are willing to help give black people reservations when they literally bombed and tore up a town where black people were doing well and doing on their own, had their own banks, their own way of life? White folks basically destroyed that. So you tell me today, you know, why is it that black people are still giving their money to white banks instead of coming up with, you know, black, all the people who are professional people in the banking industry, accountants and stuff like that? How come we can't form our own black bank, United Bank, and that bank go from one state to another where black people can invest their money in black people? And the monies from that bank goes back to black businesses and black neighborhoods. You tell me why it's so hard for a black person today to own a home, because there fewer and fewer black people are owning homes. There's more and more black people in the cities that's living in high-rise tenant, raggedy apartments and raggedy neighborhoods. Why? And we're working the hardest. We're working the lonest. But yet, we're still working for whites who go from our neighborhoods to the suburbs, back to their pearly homes, and that have the values that they get. They can sell their home and they get the value from their homes. Black people that do own homes, not the majority of them, they don't have any value in their homes. In the neighborhoods that they live in, you can have a 2,500, 3,000 square foot home in a black neighborhood, in a white neighborhood, that they're going to get the value. But black people ain't going to get that value, because no one wants to live in the neighborhoods that black people live in. Black people are paying more in rent than they are for people that typically pay for mortgages for 30 years to whatever banks. Banks are discriminately credit companies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. Those are the biggest racist. They're all part of the banking system. They're all, the credit system was only created for people of color, because white people virtually they didn't, when they got their land inherited from black people and took it from black people, and basically before black people even know that they was eligible to own homes and stuff like that, before they started making it equal opportunity, so to speak, white people were just given land. Literally, go back in history. They were given land. They were given homes just because they were white. It was only when black people and housing discrimination and all those kind of laws come along in the early 60s and 60s, late 60s and 70s, where, you know, black people started fighting for civil rights and all these different organizations started forming housing and different things like that, which a lot of people still went from the slums of where they was living to projects. You know, they created low income housing. You know, we'll give you low income housing in your neighborhood, but we don't want you to come past the Mason-Dixon line, you know. And you still have it right today in Florida, where they have what's called homeowners associations, where you have to actually go see a white person. And that white person, you know, scrutinizes who your application and everything, looking at you and everything. And they determine, you know, whether you're going to live in a place or not. They, by their own, even though you've been approved by the owner of the home or the owner of the apartment, you still have to go see this homeowner association. It's called steering. Okay. They can deny certain groups of people from moving to certain areas. And if you look at Florida, it is virtually a checkerboard where blacks live certain places and whites live other places, in gated communities with high value homes, and blacks live in communities that are low valued homes, and they're not going to ever get the money back. And we are living in a time where Republicans remind me of the kids who families years ago lost the Civil War, and they're still fighting that same civil, mental, political war today. You know, those same people that lost the Civil War, you know, are still the white people and the powers of people who still are trying to push the envelope, you know, of discrimination. Go back to the days, you know, when they were predominantly, you know, getting everything and black people wasn't getting hardly anything. And you look at it today, black people don't hardly have anything. People of color don't hardly have anything. Whites have more and more and more. They have more businesses. They're more managers. They're more homeowners. Blacks have fewer homes. They're less managers. And they basically are few black bosses. I mean, real high level executives. Because why don't we have our own banks? Why don't black people have a community where they own their homes? And they have millions of dollars if they sell their homes. Why don't they have businesses like Microsoft? Black people know about computers. Why don't they have businesses? Why don't black people have businesses on the level of some of the realtors that govern and control all the states, or some of the real estate that is available? Why don't black people have an opportunity? So what I'm simply trying to say to you all is that I haven't spoke to you out there for a while, 2019, and you can see this is 2022. In 2-3 year period of time, things haven't really changed. And the progress of black people is steadily lagging further and further behind, because you have more people who are complacent. And then in Florida, you have a different hodgepodge of black people, Caribbean, some people from Africa, some people from various different countries, where things are not as well as they were maybe in America for people of color. And they come in this community and they get content. They're content, you know, with just living in a hut. I live in an apartment that costs $1,350 a month. And it's literally like a hotel room, a Motel 6, literally. I mean, I can hear people downstairs. I can hear people on both sides of me. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're beautiful people. but we all live in a crowded condition, paying astronomical amounts. $13.50 for this place is ludicrous. It should be at the most $8.50, because that's all it is a hotel room. It's called a one-bedroom apartment, literally, but it's just a hotel room, literally. If you go to any Motel 6, you'll have the same thing. And it's Florida is one of those places that they say that is astronomically expensive. Well, that's because the white folks' values of what they own is, you know, it's just really out of control. And there's no government regulations over how much property owners sell their properties for. And in Florida, people sell their properties for astronomical amounts of money. But when you go into the place, it's just like a 1970 or 1980 or a 1990 home. Well, it might be well kept and different things like this here. But the facts of the matter is, it's still an old fashioned, outdated, you know, home. And it's really, a lot of times, if you go look at homes, they're outdated. I mean, they're well kept, but they're 70-ish, they're 80-ish, they're 90-ish. Okay. And then the people that do have the newer constructed homes that were built, or they, you know, did some, it's going to be so much money. It's going to be, it ain't gonna be worth your time. So I wouldn't even, if I was an investor, I wouldn't look at Florida. It's too much of a racist, one-sided place to live. I mean, look at DeSantis, the governor, who is actually a minority. I don't know what type of minority he is, but Italian or some type of, I don't, he's not white. He might claim white, but DeSantis, I mean, come on now. The name in and of itself. But I'm just saying, there's a lot of people of color here. And, you know, you got some people who think they're better than the others, like Cubans, think that they're not black, but they are black. But, you know, some are light and some are darker, and some think they're better than the other. Just like, you know, in the black race, you got yellow people sometimes that used to think that, I mean, white people used to prioritize lighter skinned yellow people more than they do actually black people. They, you know, they give the, this is since slavery, and the same kind of thing is going on today. You look right here in Florida, you know, you got all types of races, all different peoples of colors, but, you know, they frown their noses up at each other instead of them sticking together as people of color. People of color don't realize this. We are the majority. And if we ever could see that we are the majority, and start supporting one another, Asians, whether you Asian, Italian, Cuban, whatever you may be, black, American, whatever you are. People of color are the majority, but we still let the white minority basically run us. They're the most powerful because they have the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and the Marines, and the police. So that's what keeps us all in check. And that's why a lot of people of color sell out. They want to be white. You know, I mean, they act white. They talk white. They believe in white politics, like a black person saying that they believe in Donald Trump, or they stand for Donald Trump, the way that Donald Trump thinks. And you got a lot of people that are Trump drunk, and they drink Trump juice, and they stick their chest out, and they starting to say things that they normally wouldn't say. But as soon as you knock them out or something like that, then you got to charge. So you really have to be careful with people in this day and time, and what we're dealing with here in America, because we're living at a very treacherous time. I mean, there's a ticking bomb, and it can bomb that can go off any day, because people of color, real people of color, progressive people of color, aggressive people of color who have guns, who are armed, and some people, white, getting on TV thinking that they're not armed, thinking, calling them slaves and calling us, saying disrespectful terms and stuff like this here. You know, people of color are armed. And that's why people of color are a majority in the prisons and correctional systems because they kill, they murder, they're aggressive. And those are the kind of people they don't want out here. You understand me? But keep in mind, black people are armed. And for whites who think that they're not, well, you'll get a rude awakening if you try to mess with some black person or black people that you don't. And what most people do is they're bullies and they try to take advantage of people who are not, because they're not going to go to the people who they know got guns because they know they won't get shot in the head or they're going to get maimed in some kind of way. But what they generally do, they're bullies, typically white crackers who, you know, and I'm calling them white crackers because they're still a part of that regime of the old, like I said, back in the day, they lost the Civil War. Those are the children that growed up, their parents raised them to still think racist, the racist seeds, still calling the black man niggers and stuff like that and referring to them as slaves, getting on TV, like they went up there to the Capitol, try to overturn it on January 6th. Don't never forget that, because that was a sign of real white frustration. And those, that's the kind of frustration and that whites have. But I can remember when I used to be in prison, and I don't have no problem saying that, you know, because that was a time in my life that really inspired me to be the outspoken, articulate person that I am. Whites were predominantly faggots in prisons. They're the girls in prisons. And what is shocking to me when I come out here in the world to see some of these gay guys that were in prisons now with women. And then some of these people become leaders in different organizations. And, you know, they are interrelating with a woman, or if you look at a lot of the, I'm gonna make a point here. A lot of white people try to stick their chests out, and I'm not saying all, but I'm saying a lot of white people are very gay, because they even like women to stick dildos up their booties. Just look at the pornographic. Who's more pornographic? Black people. Asian people, Mexicans, or Indians, who's more pornographic? Who runs the pornographic industry in America? Think about that. White people are the most freaky porno people. White men like to get screwed up the butt. Literally. I've seen it right in the prisons and correctional systems all over the United States, whether it be federal or states. White men are basically the ones who give up the ass. They're the girls. But when they come out here in the community, they go back to trying to be a man. And I've seen a white boy. He was married to came out of prison he was a gay person, came out to a white woman, had a good job, good home. They had children and everything, but he was still getting screwed up the ass. He was more gay than he was into a heterosexual relationship. And you see that a lot. And I wonder a lot when I see cocky white boys running around with guns and stuff, scared. See, and it's a hell of a thing when you got to live with guns in your home because you're so overwhelmed with fear. You know, see, those are the people that they're cowards. You know, you take a black man and a white man, take his gun, just put him in a room naked in a four-cornered room. And let's see who come out. Let's see who come out. Okay? Let's see the man in them. And I'm really expressing some of this aggressiveness and frustration and anger because I get tired of these white folks that go around here with these guns talking, calling black people names and different stuff like this here. And, you know, and they don't know. There are some black people that will tear your head off your shoulders literally because of all the things that you've done to black people for all these years. Please believe me. Some black people can't wait to explode. And so you need to be careful in feeding the flames of talking about calling people black people slaves and calling them out their names and stuff like this here. Black people ain't putting up with that. And then the other day, some racist people gonna tell me, get out the country. Get out of America. Motherfucker, I ain't going nowhere. You hear me? My people was... We built this motherfucker, and I ain't going nowhere. You understand me? And I'm going to still be speaking to the day that I'm 100, a centurion, and telling about, you know, what's going on in America, making people aware of what's going on. And those who sleeping and those who don't care, I don't see how you can, you know, be the kind of person that can turn a blind eye to some of the atrocities that are going on. You have to speak out. You have to stand up. You got to stop just taking anything and accepting anything. And I refuse to do it. So what I'm telling you is that there's so much shit going on out here in this world that we have to take a stand. Anchor is one way that I take my stand. I'm 66 years old. I'm still in excellent shape and excellent condition. Why? Because I get up every morning at 4:30. I go to the gym. I work my body, my legs, all the way up to my neck, you know. And then, you know, I study, I read, you know, and I see people for who they are. I respect people for who they are. I don't disrespect people, but I don't like to be disrespected. And one thing that I can't stand is people who advocate racism. And, you know, you already got everything. You know, you own the banks. You own most of the homes, own the properties, but you still want to, you know, push people of color further and further away from equal opportunity, having our own homes, owning our own banks, owning our own institutions independently of you. And when we did, you racially overturned and burnt up everything that we had. So what is wrong with white people that they can't see black people having their own life, having their own homes? And I mean homes of value, not some ragly ghetto property, but I'm talking about in the neighborhoods where they're gated communities. You know, why can't black people have their own homes? Why do banks, literally credit companies, why is it that white people have higher scores than black people predominantly? Why is it that predominantly white people are living in these gated and expensive communities and black people today are living in less value? Why is it that black people have less credit scores with and FICO scores than whites? Tell me, why is it that more white people have businesses and black people and people of color don't have? Tell me why in 2022 this is getting worse and less of a dream for a person of color, but a person, a college kid coming out, a white kid coming out of college versus a black kid coming out of college has less debt than a black person. And then that white same kid has a better advantage over that person of color, but they will study in the same, the person of color might be as smart as or smarter, like my daughter. She virtually went to college when she was 16, and she still in college graduated at the top of her class. While you think about all the white students that she went to school with, they all got their own homes, okay, got their own businesses. She's got her own business, but she don't have her own home. Why? Because she's a minority. Okay, she can't go to any bank, even though her credit score at one time was 700. She can't go to a bank and get a home like a white person, virtually with no money down, based on her credit score. And she basically is an educated kid. And so what I'm saying is, it's unfair still today, even with my kids and anyone that has kids today that's graduating from college. White kids are still getting a huge advantage when it comes to businesses and owning their own homes. And being a property owner is very important to a human being growing up in this society today, because that has value. When you have value in your home, you can buy another home and you can buy businesses. You and virtually you have money. And that, why is black people and people of color getting less of the pie, and whites are getting more and more? And still you got these white people running around here with guns and stuff, wanting to push black people completely out of the, and people of color completely out of the ranks of being able to have something, equal opportunity like everybody else. It's a sad state of affairs. And, you know, it just shows you how some people hate, you know, I mean, it's hate. It's pure hate. And why would you hate me? Because my skin is darker than yours. But yet, when you want to go to the beach, you want to put tan oil on your skin and you want to be dark as me. What is it about me as a black person that you don't like because you're so pale? You know, or I don't know what it is, but I know, you know, when I go to the gym, you know, you see the same thing there. You know, everybody wants to be big. Everybody wants to be muscular. But back in the slave days, no one wanted to be the muscle. Everybody wanted to be the boss. Everybody wanted to be the master. You know, and the slaves, you know, did everything. They built everything. You know, they did all the work. But yet, they didn't get no money. They didn't get no homes. Except for those who possibly inherited homes after the white master died. And, you know, maybe the white master raped their mama. And, you know, so he willed it to a light-skinned, you know, person who, you know, they raped their mamas. Keep in mind, that's the way white people are. If you look up statistics, white people are the biggest rapists and sexual assault people in the United States and the world. They rape the whole world. Think about it. And don't get me wrong, black people, the Moors, yeah, they did their share of taking Italian women who at one time were blonde and now they're dark hair, you know, and so, you know, history says it all. But the facts of the matter is white people rape their own daughters, sleep with their own mothers. They sleep with their own kind. They created racism, telling people to stay within their own families. They created that. Keep in mind, when they created racism, telling people to stay within their own families, what they did, because they were so incestuous. They wanted to, incestuous and so arrogant and so afraid, knowing that people of color was a majority, they basically slaved and lynched, enslaved, and I mean, they virtually killed and hung black people from lampposts and city lampposts and, you know, just to make a point to them, stay within their own race. Don't have no relationships with white women and, you know, no interracial relationships. And today you can see that's out of control because blacks are with whites, blacks are with Latinos, blacks are with Asians, blacks are with every race of people that there is. And no matter how far you try to hide the truth and, you know, kill people or do whatever you do, the truth is still going to set the world free. So this conversation, you can see, is filled with a lot of undermining, aggressive points of views because there's a lot going on in America. And I feel for those people who are turning a blind eye to realities or who are lost, still just stumbling around every day, just getting up, going to work and not paying attention to the real issues that face you, that, you know, confront you and that affect you daily. Because if you're living in an apartment or in a high rise and you're paying slum landlord amounts of money, you're virtually just a slave. You're still enslaved to the white master. It's just like you living on the land and, you know, he just giving you a pork and a beef and you're still virtually affording him to live in the mansion and have everything that he wants and pass it on to his children. And we're still the slaves. So you have to look at life the way it is. I'm 66 and I'm living for the first time in a southern state, which I told myself after Trayvon Martin got killed that I would never, ever come to this state. But once my wife died in Colorado, and I had no real reason to stay in Colorado, my children, my grandchildren were here, I navigated here. And it's been the most piss-pot decision I've ever made. And the most, I've never ever lived in an apartment that was simply a motel room. I never ever, but before the sacrifice of just to see my grandson and my granddaughter and my children grow up and live their lives, I have done that. But I'm virtually losing my patience with living like this because I'm not accustomed to it. I'm used to having, even if I rent a nice home. And when I lived in Colorado, I had a beautiful home, 3-bedroom home, a beautiful country kitchen that had stepped down into a sunken living room, had a beautiful basement where I actually worked for Marriott for 13 years, and had my own office downstairs, my washer and dryer storage area. I mean, and it cost me $1,750. Now, I've been here. My wife died in June 9th, 2016. And I stayed, I came here like 2018. So that hasn't been that long ago. Now I know that prices of real estate and rents have increased, but you can still go to places like the Midwest and you can live a life where you can afford a home. The same amount of money, practically, or a little bit more that you would spend for, like I'm spending $1,350 for this apartment. I could go to Colorado and easily probably maybe $2,000, maybe $1,850, somewhere in there, you know, just depending on where you live. Because if you live mostly where blacks live, you're going to get a pretty nice deal. But if you try to live, you know, where the property values are real high, where whites live, then it's going to be at the higher value, even if it's for rent or for sale. But you do have an opportunity, I don't know why, more so in the Midwest, to own a home or to rent a home than you do in a place like Florida. And don't ask me why, but here they steer black people to certain areas. And, you know, you're basically, unless you are some rare individual, a sports individual, you know, and even they, you know, have issues with, you know, living where they want to live and being where they want to live. But most people, unless you're a sports person or, you know, you got some astronomical money like Michael Jordan or somebody like that, you can probably pick wherever you want to live. You know, then people are going to try to kiss your ass and stuff like that. You know, white folks try to kiss them kind of people's ass sometimes. Depend on the situation, you know, because even they have incidents that are racial too, no matter how much money that you have as a black person. But the more money that you have, the more independence that you do have, and white folks don't have nothing, because you can virtually, if you got enough money, you virtually can have your own bank, and you don't need a bank to put your money in, because you can virtually create your own. And I don't know why a lot of those black people who have the millions of dollars, whether they be a fighter, whether they be like Tyler Perry, you know, all those people, you know, why they don't take and create banks that black people can, you know, put their money in and really gain some value and from stocks and different things like that, you know, like the white people do with the white banks. And I don't know why, you know, people that got lots of money, they don't invest in those kinds of things where black people can have an opportunity, like buy a whole a neighborhood of homes and let black people have an opportunity to own homes, equal opportunity, especially when you have a lot of millions of dollars. And, you know, you can pass on that money and maybe you do have somebody to pass it on to. But some people that have millions of dollars, they die and their money goes to, you know, good causes and different things like this. So it makes you wonder why people of color who have the millions of dollars don't really invest it in some kind of way where black people or people of color can benefit. And the more black people or people of color that have their own homes at the same equal opportunity values that whites do, the less that we're going to need white people, the more independent we're going to become. Now, can you hear what I just said? See, the less we depend on them, the more independent we become. That's something they don't want, because that's what happened when the blacks basically had their own banks, their own way of life. And then the whites went down there and burnt them out. And you know that part of history. It's the same thing today. We're so dependent on them. If we were independent, had our own businesses, had our own homes, the majority of us, then they would be out of business, because a lot of us basically go to work for them. We afford their businesses. We make them where they can go back to their suburbs and come into the city, and we work for them. So we basically keep them going in their businesses and keep them going in the same economic slots, because we are still the slaves. And when you look at that picture, you should want to, as a slave, you know, be a master. And that's mechanically just the way life works. A slave at some point can become a master, but you have to stop being dependent on the master. So I wanted to reach out to you all again. I hadn't talked to you out there since 2019, and I wanted to reach out there and say something to you and let you know that I was still around. Those of you who follow me, listen to my podcast, I apologize. Like I said, that it's been such a space and time, from 2019 to 2020 to 2022. But I will be talking to you a little bit more often out there now that I know that this platform is still available. One of my favorite things to do is to articulate and speak out my mind, because that's what the 14th Amendment gives us all the opportunity and the right to do. And I'm so thankful to a platform like Anchor that allows, you know, an individual like myself to be able to speak out, to say what's on my mind, to get it out, the consciousness of the depths of my thoughts, and be able to say, hello, how y'all doing out there? And then also to speak to your thoughts. And I apologize for anyone that I insult when I'm expressing myself and using my 14th Amendment to say what I feel, that I, you know, what I see and the way I've grown up from 1955 to 2022. I haven't seen much changes for black people. And I'm being just virtually, you know, blunt. That's one of the ways that I've always been, is very blunt. And I apologize, like I said, for anyone that their feelings are hurt or affected. But, you know, reality is what it is. And when things change, when I can move from this apartment from paying $1,350 to paying $1,350 for a home of, you know, two-bedroom home with a fence yard, you know, and a garage and things like that, then I'll feel different. You know, when that equal opportunity is available to me, where I can transition, and I see other black people, or can be independent and have property values, and we can have our own businesses and different things like this, you know, like in the voiceover world, for instance. And I don't want to pick on them, because they're not the only industry that is denying black people. Don't get me wrong, there are some black people in the industry, but very few, very few. And you constantly see people of color not having the opportunity to really speak. I mean, look at TV. It's predominantly who? I'll wait. You know, so I don't watch a lot of TV. And if I do, I watch black shows. I watch black people. I'm interested in black people. I'm not interested in white-oriented shows. I don't give a damn who the actors or how funny or how dramatic they may be. I'm interested in black shows. And that's what I like to see. People like me, the way I live, the way I think. And that's what I relate to. And I apologize. Like I said, I don't date within my race. Now, don't get that taken the wrong way. There's some things that I do and there's some things that I don't. I prefer, because I believe that the white man set up the world the way it is today, that we have to mate within our own race. Remember what I told you, who is the biggest hypocrite in the world and in the world, okay, that set up the world the way it is. Because if you basically mate within your own kind, there's a word for it. And, you know, it's incest and it's a crime. But some people don't care, because if that enables them to multiply and keep their race going, okay, the less people that interact or interrelate with them, that's the way white people want it. They want their race to basically be totally white. They don't want no interracial relations, because why? People of color are the majority. So if you interrelate, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of black people that have strong feelings about, well, I only do black people. I only do Asian people. I only do, I had someone tell me the other day on a dating site, she was Asian. She says, well, I just don't think that our races will coincide. I'm very much Asian, and I just don't think I can get along with a black person. This is on a dating site. So, I mean, you know, you got some people who are strong-willed and about, you know, race. And not only white, but it could be Asians. It could be, you know, different people. But I am the kind of person, I think like the Bible said, I see my seed to the world and not within my own kind. Don't get me wrong. I have a very beautiful black woman that I love for 30-something years. She is an extraordinary, beautiful girl. But we live so far apart, and that's another subject. But anyway, but I'm very conscious of that relationship, and I tell her all the time, she looks just like me. You know, she's so much like me. And it makes me feel, I can't explain, but it makes me feel like I'm actually dating somebody that's within my family, like my sister. You know, and I told her that, honestly, the way I feel. But when I'm with a white woman or with a Latino woman, I don't feel that way. I feel like that opposite attraction is what it's supposed to be. And not to say that my feelings are any less or anything like that, but it's just the way I feel, you know, based upon my mind and the way I see the universe. So anyway, I want to kind of end it right now and wind it up. And I just want to thank you guys out there for listening to me, following me. It's been a long time since I reached out and spoke to anyone. Sometimes I kind of rant and rave. I go from one thing to another. One of the things I do want to share with everyone, I don't smoke weed at all anymore. I don't say that weed is not good for people who choose to smoke it, but that's not something I do anymore. But I do still, and I still will have shows that deal with the quality of weed and what's going on in the weed world. Here in Florida, over 70% of the people have voted for weed to be recreational, and it's still medicinal because the state still makes a lot of money on the medicinal weed. And, you know, you got governors like Ron DeSantis and other Republicans who are virtually blocking the will of the people. And this is what I say about voting. You know, the majority of people vote for something like in the state of Florida, where 73% of the people have voted for recreational marijuana. And then you just got a few staunch Republicans. There's another word that they call them nowadays, where they're really, the president refers to them, where they're, you know, they got that, they all drink that Trump juice. But, you know, they're trying to take the world back to a place where, you know, like Ron DeSantis is saying, that white education is, white history is okay to be taught in the schools, but black history is not. And he's literally saying that he don't want black history to be taught to the children. Now listen, who does that? Here's a people that was forced to this country, dropped off between here and Africa, all over by slave ship. Okay. And here today, they still are a downtrodden group of people who don't have the same equal opportunities. And here's a governor, a powerful man, who is virtually saying he don't want black history taught in the schools to children. Now, who wants that? Who would want a leader who is not for all the people, but he's only for some of the people, and that he has such staunch views and points of views that he literally uses the police to do things, to arrest people, and arbitrarily he uses his power in these kinds of ways. Who wants a governor that literally is for one group of people and advocates it? And in his politics and his laws, he does not want black history, okay, taught in schools. Why? Think about that. So this is the state of times that we're living in. And you see, racism still exists, even in our leadership. And you got this guy that's called Trump that people are drinking. I call it Trump juice. And you can hear it in their attitudes. You can see it in their leadership. You can see it conveyed in who their posture is, the frown on their face, you know, the guns that they have to carry. They advocate the things they advocate. I mean, what's wrong, America? You lost the Civil War years ago. You're still pushing the envelope. Let it go. Be a person that can accept defeat, okay? But still, you're still, even though you lost the Civil War as a white person, you still have everything, more so than black folks, but you still don't want people to even know the truth. Don't even want history taught to the children. You want to mislead them. But keep in mind, there's some people that virtually abuse their children. I mean, you know, I ain't gonna say what race, but there's a lot of people that incestually take their daughters, rape their mothers, you know, seriously. And you know about the abortion? Well, you know, there was a case where a white man, and you can historically look this up, raped his daughter and did not want her to have an abortion. I ain't saying nothing. Look at history. Why would someone want someone to have a baby that they was raped by their own father? Okay, why would that father want his daughter to have his baby, to keep the riches in the family, so to speak? So anyway, that's another subject. We ain't gonna get too far on these deep subjects. You can hear the aggressive things that over the years I haven't spoke to you out there since 2019, 2020. The world still moves. The world is still churning. There's all kinds of stuff that I want to talk to you guys about. But I'm going to kind of wind it down here and just kind of throw out some things out there. And, you know, if you guys have feedback, whether it's against or opposed to what I'm saying, hey, give it to me. You know what I mean? I'll gladly address it in my next podcast. You're welcome to basically say what you want to say. This is America. I believe in the 14th Amendment, and that's the reason why I love this opportunity to speak out on the podcast. And I hope, like I said, that men will be men, boys will be boys, and those who choose to be something else that they choose to be can be the best that they can be. Whether you are a woman and you grew up thinking like a boy, or you're a boy and you grew up thinking like a girl, and you know, today you reflect who you are, I still salute you, no matter what your position is in life, what position you take. I still salute all peoples. I think that all people have their own way of thinking. I don't have no issues with it. I just think that the way I grew up mostly macho. And I apologize if, you know, if I've ever insulted anyone differently, that thinks different than me, that didn't grow up. Like I said, if you're a boy and you grew up thinking like a girl, or you're a girl that grew up thinking like a boy, I don't disrespect you. I don't think your position in America or in the world is any different than mine. We all have a struggle to deal with. And so that's another subject, that another podcast that I hope to speak on and share with my point of view. So I'm going to wind it up. I made some shrimp, some cheesy, shrimpy grits with, instead of using pork bacon, I grinded up a Polish sausage, smoked beef, Polish sausage. Oh man, it's so delicious. And had some scallions in it, and I'm so full. I have an appointment coming up here at 10 o'clock. So I'm gonna go ahead and wind it down so I can get a shower and get ready to hit the road and do some other things. But it was beautiful getting back out there to the good people who follow me and who listen to me, who I know that love and care about me. It's these kinds of things that I love doing and speaking. I'm hoping at some point to get my young daughter, and who also had a radio station at one time. So I'm hoping that me and her can team up some kind of way. She's living in Georgia now with my granddaughter, Miss Goddess, and my other daughter lives right down the street from me with my grandson Wolfgang. And I'm hoping that somehow or another, that we as a family, because we all got something to say from our own points of views, I'm hoping that I can incorporate their views as young people, and somehow or another we can all talk on different levels, and even reach to my daughter down there in Texas and some of my grandchildren down there who are grown adults and stuff like that. I'm hoping somehow through podcasts, through communication, through the 14th Amendment, that somehow or another my family and the people I know, I can unite their thoughts and share those thoughts to people throughout the United States who care about speaking out and talking about certain issues. And I swear to you, if I said anything to insult anyone today, that's not my intention. It's only the way I see the world, the way I've experienced it, the way the world has virtually responded to me as a black person. And like I said, here in Florida, this is the worst life that I've lived, where blacks or people of color are just steered and they're not given an equal opportunity. They work hard. They're the hardest workers that I can see. They work the longest hours, but they get the least amount of dollars, and they have the least amount of equity in a home, or the least amount of opportunities. And I'm just saying that in the world, a lot of things are not fair. And I'm saying that why is it still in 2022 that, you know, the same things that black people was dealing with 10 years ago are the same atrocities that they're having to swallow today. Thank you again. My voice is telling me I need to get a drink of water. So this is where I'm going to go ahead and plant you now like the farmer and dig you later. Have a good one. Today I want to talk about a subject that kind of is deep underneath my skin. You know, I did a podcast the other day, and I kind of let it slip out through a few resources, Twitter and different things like that there, to kind of just see, you know, what the attitude or what the response would be. And a lot of times, you know, in this world that we grow up in and that we call, you know, the white man's world, growing up black in a white man's world, you know, I look at myself, you know, me, myself, and I. And I have to always be conscious and cognizant of who I am, where I want to go in life, and where I've been, and from whence I've come, and what is my future. And so looking at that as a black male, I'm going to say that I've been fortunate. And a lot of times you'll hear me say things like white people, white men, the power that they have and the things that they do. But let me tell you something. When I say that, that's in general terms, but not in reality, because when I look at my life, there's been a lot of white men and a lot of white people, women, that have helped me. And so you virtually can't, and I want to make sure that we don't get disconnected in thought, but white people are not the total blame, and not all white people especially are not the total blame for blacks being where they are in life. A lot of black people, including myself, have been my own worst enemy. And so I would say this, like right today, black people are more not united than I've ever seen before. Now, I don't know if it's due to the, here in Florida area, I don't know if it's due to the infiltration of so many people of color, and so many different ways of life, and so many styles, you know, I mean, so many different environments that people come from, so many different extremes that people live, black people. But what is amazing to me is that the majority of people that I see today, sisters and brothers, don't care about each other, could care less. And everyone is so caught up on the rat race, the division there is a division, divisiveness, all type of tactics that are programmed into us from the time we're children. We're taught to think in terms of survival of the fittest. And we virtually don't have the unity that we had. When I was a kid, I remember hearing on the news that Martin Luther King died. I think I was 13. And then shortly after that, one of the Kennedys, and, you know, all the horrific things that were going on when I was a kid. I remember grown folks crying and, you know, people crowding around the radio and listening. And today, I say to, I think these kinds of thoughts and these kind of, you know, as I came up during the civil rights and different things that was going on, and I look at life and myself, how I'm connected, and, you know, how you connect the dots. And I don't want to try to, when I do these podcasts, I want to make sure that I don't pick on one particular race of people, particularly whites, because white people can't be at fault for everything just because they're aggressive and because they care about their quality of life and because they want to be the best that they can be. And yeah, historically, there's been some dirty and evil things that have been done to black people by white people. But the fact of the matter is there's been some horrible and cruel things that black people do to black people to stop their own progress. And one of the things that I see today is there's so many black people that's hung up on survival of the fittest that they'll hit each other in the mouth. They'll put each other down. They'll sell each other out. And there's more of that. Sell out. I'll give you an example. I went to the Orange Blossom event here in Florida. A colleague at work, who's a good friend of mine, invited me. I had never been to any such event. And it was beautiful. The talent of our kids is just amazing. And it's unique. It was extraordinary. And it was the most beautiful opportunity that I had in life to see the talent of these different drum and bugle corps. When I was a kid, I used to be in the Midlanders and Boys Club. And I used to play the cymbals. And we had a good band back then. And it was good to see other bands in this day and time still strutting that pride and that school pride and that, you know, just very talented kids. It was beautiful. And I enjoyed myself immensely. And I knew that the way traffic is in Florida is horrendous. I mean, like I said, you got a hodgepodge of people from different, not only, you know, different colors and different nationalities and ethnicity. And they literally, the way they drive here, oh my God. If you think about all the environments that these people come from, across seas, whether they obey traffic rules or not, but no one seems to know traffic rules. No one seems to care about traffic rules. I mean, if you look at Florida, they're at the end of itself, especially in the area where I'm here in Broward County, there are so many accidents on a daily basis because people drive like maniacs. They drive like they're in the Indianapolis 500 on a daily basis. I mean, they may be just going around the corner, but they drive 70, 80 miles an hour. I mean, it's high volume traffic, and you'll see cars going in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And then you'll also see cars going like 10 miles an hour. I mean, it's incredible how the driving here is in Florida. And you see in that the differences of people. And you also see in black people. And like I said, when I say black people, there is a lot that that term entails. Because you got different kinds of people down here who virtually look black, have the dark skin tone, but not necessarily don't associate themselves with being a black person, especially a black person that grew up here in America. So they'll say, I'm Haitian. I mean, now, you know, they'll say, I'm Cuban. They'll say, you know, I'm from, you know, wherever, Africa, you know, I'm from Nigeria, you know, but in America, you're black, okay? It don't matter where you come from, you're black. And you can stand for something or stand for nothing at all. But what I see here in America is black people is the enemy of themselves. And constantly here in Florida, you see it over and over and over again. Black people are not kind to each other. Black people are more kinder to whites than they are to each other. And so this is what I see. Divisiveness. It is a reality, especially here in Florida. And you see the reality of how black people are so, I mean, just the other day, all these black people came together and, you know, applauded the talent of these colleges, these black colleges, HBCUs, you know, and their talent and everything. And then at the end of the day, getting out the parking lot was horrendous. A young black man literally pulled his car out in front of my Jeep, so much to the point that I had to pull off course. I had to go to the left to avoid hitting him, and he just kept pulling his car out. And then you had about 3-4 cars that were in a quandary. And I mean, no one could move because this young, selfish black kid chose to pull his car out, even though it wasn't his turn, because he didn't have the patience to wave to the ongoing traffic like myself that was there before him. He literally wanted to pull out in front of me, and it was just horrible. And then when I proceeded to get out my vehicle and let him know that he was wrong, he wanted to get hostile. And so, and then there were some other girls, black girls, that was cheering him on. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna call the police. And I called the police. And you could see he was trying to get away. I got his license plates. I gave it to the police, and I told him that, you know, he was actually trying to create a crash because he was so selfish that he didn't wave. He wanted to get out of there. So the police, the white police, had to come. And once the white police came, everybody fell in order, which says to me something huge. See, black people can talk that talk all they want, but they are, in my opinion, their biggest enemy. They are the real problem, because there's only so much these days that white people can do to keep you from virtually being going forward in progress. If you really want to progress and make something of yourself and be something in life, I'm a good example of that. Because I could be a downtrodden, feeling sorry for myself, saying white folks did this and I can't do that, and, you know, and be powerless. But I'm a powerful black man. I refuse to let any source block me from doing anything that I want to do to survive. And that survival of the fittest is within me, to overcome the power source that holds people back. I refuse to acknowledge that. And when I see it, I find a way to go through it, over it, or around it, because I refuse to allow myself to be stymied or stopped or caught up or hung up, you know, and like in a traffic jam of life, and not trying or not having faith and keep going and be patient. I'm not impatient. And this young kid, he was very impatient. And I see that quality a lot in our black young men. They're impatient, or they have no knowledge of self, or no understanding of where they come from or where they're going. And they don't care. They just, for the moment, rushing, for the moment, don't care about anything else, don't care about nobody else but their self, and for the moment, that's all they live. I say in life, we live our life to the fullest and enjoy our lives to the fullest every day, because tomorrow ain't promised to you. But you have some young men who have no cognizant thinking of today, where they're going, and about life is simply a challenge. And if you don't accept that challenge and live it and do all the things that you have to do preparatory and maintenance wise, to be the best man that you can be, then you're not going to be ready for the race of life. And this is the reason why a lot of people give up, they get burnt out, or they quit. I see a lot of black men today, they live with their mamas. They have no sources or resources of how to take care of themselves. You know, they depend upon a woman, you know. So you have a lot of grown men who virtually live with a woman, but the woman is still their mother. She still cooks for them. She still does their laundry. She does everything for them. And you got black men who will come home after a hard day of work, which is their responsibility to take care of their family. And they'll cry. Well, you ain't made me nothing to eat. When are you going to fix me something? How come you don't have anything? Well, listen, that woman is not meant to be your chef for the rest of your life. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some women that cater to men in that capacity. Oh, baby, don't worry. I got you something. When you come home, it'll be there, you know, hot, warm on the stove. Even though I got to work 3 other jobs, you know what I mean? Don't worry, baby. It'll be there. Now, listen, black women are queens in our life. And please believe me, the black woman is the best thing that a black man will ever have. And a black man better learn how to cherish that from the time he comes from the womb to the time he is a man, to the time he grows middle age, to the time he grows old age, and recognize his queen, because she is everything. And I can say this about black women because I've had some good black women in my life. My mother, my grandmother, my aunties, my nieces, my cousins, my sisters. I mean, my sisters, my stepsisters, who raised me from the time I was a child, taught me things about women, about life, and things that I'll never, ever forget. And I've been very fortunate to be around some quality women. So I appreciate our black women. You hear me? Now, listen to me. I still prefer to date outside my race. Now, the reason for that is simply this. I don't believe in everything I have studied historically that it was meant. I mean, the black family is one family of many families that's in the world. The Italian family, okay? You got the Hispanic family. You got the Caucasian family. And you can't tell me as a people or as a family that it was meant for me to mate within my own race, okay? That is something that was created by men, okay? Not by God, because God says in the Bible, if you read it, it says, sow your seed to the world, okay? So that's the way I believe. And I believe that, you know, my sister, she's my sister. She's my auntie. She's my grandma. She's my mother. She's my cousin. She's my niece. She's my friend to the end, okay? And that's how I embrace black women. And I respect black women in that capacity, okay? But I have one black woman. I will say that she is the exception. She's the most beautiful woman I've ever met. And I've known her for 31 years. Her and my wife is white and she is black. They have been the best women that have ever my life has been graced with. My wife died June 9th, 2016. Lord bless her soul. The best woman I ever met in my whole entire life was Shannon Marie Joseph. You hear me? Don't get me wrong now. I've had other women other than that. But those two women, when they came in my life, they were the best women that I've ever met. And right today, 33 years later, even though my wife is deceased, Dion is still my best friend. And I would take her as a partner over any woman. But the facts of the matter is, she lives so far away. She has a child to raise, and I applaud her because she's a mother first. Even though she loves a man, she don't put men before her babies. And I applaud that quality in a woman, because there's so many women, our black women, that will put a man before their babies. And that's not the way I see a woman, because my mom, she took care of us, even though there was no men, and she had a lot of men abandon her that include my own father, mistreat her and abuse her. But she kept going, and she didn't let that stop her. She kept going. She took care of her children. And that's one thing I can say about my mother. She is a hell of a woman, and I applaud my mom, because she taught me many things that a man or my father could never teach me. But there was one man in my life, and let me give credit where credit's due. There was one man in my life, there's been many men, white, black, and all different types, that have taught me many things. But one man that stands out in my life that really taught me about life, that was Roy Faulkner. I am, conversationally, due to Roy Faulkner. I mean, he used to stay up with me night and day, talking to me night and day, schooling me, telling me about life. And I've never, ever forgot the things that he taught me, the things that he showed me, and the things that he did for me. As a young man, as a child, he implanted wisdom and the seeds of wisdom. And I never, ever forget the things that he gave to me, the tools. And those same tools are tools that I try to hand off to my daughters right today. I was fortunate to have three beautiful daughters, Saket, Shayla, and Sonique. I don't know how all the names came out with S's, but that's, well, I know Shannon did it deliberately, and her best friend, Shauna, her name starts with S too. But it's just amazing how Ronnie, who was my first girlfriend, Sook's mom, she ended up basically having her name starts with an S too. So all my daughters' names starts with S's, and they're beautiful, intelligent women. And when I say beautiful, intelligent women, please believe me, all my girls are very sharp, and they have the instincts of their mom and their dad in them, and the wisdom. They're very, very bright women. And I'm proud of all my daughters. And let me tell you something, that's one of my gifts. Because there was a time in my life when I didn't think I was going to have children. But God gifted me with three beautiful daughters. And Sook was my first child. I was so proud. I wasn't in a position when Sook was born to be a good father, quality-wise, to her. But at 15, somewhere in there, I remember Shannon and me going to get her, and I met her. I mean, I knew her, that she was my child, and she as a baby and everything like this. But, you know, due to circumstances at the time, I was incarcerated. Let's just go ahead and say what it is. And so I wasn't able to see her. And I believe that I don't think no one was able to bring her to see me at that time. But I did eventually get a chance to meet my daughter. And then, you know, I already knew her family and everything. I had grew up in her family and everything, and everyone knew me. But once I met her, I've never, ever stopped communicating with Sook, my oldest child. It looks, she's a spitting image of me. And it was just Christmas or so ago, all my daughters were here, right here in my living room. And it was such a joy to me to have all my children right here with me, and their men and different things like that, and you know, the grandchildren, and you know, it was a beautiful time. And so I'm grateful, and that's one thing, that's the reason why I say I take my hat off to black women, because black women, black men, we need to recognize and realize what they mean to us, and always applaud them, and always take good care of them, always give them the best of yourself. Never play on a woman. Because a woman will always be faithful and loyal to a man who she knows she can look up to and knows that he's a good man by definition, and not just a man with a voice, a man with a shoe size, you know, a man that basically looks like a man, but is not a man, you know. And one thing that I can say about being a good man, and I am a damn good man, I don't take no shit, don't get me wrong. I call it and I say it how it is. And that's one reason why my podcast, I say right on my homepage, this is blunt. This is very all, you know, wide open. It ain't edited. Okay. It ain't, you hear me say, ain't, you know, it is me, you know, down to earth, you know, just doing me. And I don't have to have all that etiquette. I don't have to have all those mannerisms when it comes to like on the media and stuff, so social media or on TV, like you see on the news and different things like this here. I don't have to have no editors. I'm just John. I'm just going to do me. And that's what I say about men. When we get to the point where we can do us and be us and for us and understand that we as men, we need to be the kings of our generation, because we come from a generation of kings. And no matter what we want to think in terms of, and see, this is the reason why we need to realize that slavery significantly was something that you want to look back at and go, you know, what did that really mean? What was that all about? And you don't have to, you don't still have to maintain that slave mentality. I bring up history because history is a good way to understand from whence you come. Now look how far you've come and how far you have to go and what you can do to get there. Because ain't nobody can stop you from being successful really in reality these days but yourself. Ain't no white man, ain't no other man but you, yourself, that will stop you from being the best of what you can be. And there is no excuse. Every day, I'm a 66-year-old man going on 67, October 19th. Today is September the 5th. So 2022, and I'm still like the Energizer Bunny, up at 4:30 in the morning, getting dressed, getting ready to go to the gym and do my thing, you know, trying to work my body, trying to keep my wind, you know, up, and trying to do the best that I can do to be the best man that I can be, and thinking sincerely and positively and not thinking negatively and letting negative energy drag me down, pull me down. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of things that are negative that will pull you down and take away from who you are. There's a lot of things that in life, if you allow them, will distract you, will pull you completely away from what your goal in life as a man should be. And we should always be aware of those distractions, because when you meet a good woman who truly loves you and gives you child and takes you on as a man in her life, she knows that that's a challenge, but she's willing virtually to trust you, to give of herself to you totally. And when a black woman or any woman that you're lucky and blessed with, when she gives you herself, we want to also be giving as men to that woman and give her every effort and give her every sense of urgency that she deserves, and always be to attention and attentive to her, loving her emotionally, supporting her in every way, and never letting her down. Because when you let her down, you let yourself down. And I say to you, black men, look at yourself today. Because when I look at black men, I see men kissing men, And they're putting it on national TV now in commercials. Men, black men, kissing black men. I see black men sprung on alcohol the same way the Native Americans have already shown us historically that they sold America for $24 and some drinks. So are we going to still be selling each other out, or selling our souls out, or selling out our way of life, selling our women out, abandoning her, leaving her with the children? We need to take care of our children. If we have babies by a woman, we should do everything we can to support her and those children and be a good father. Not a child abuser or a child user, but a man who basically takes care and takes pride in his child. And no man, and let me say this, and I'm going to make this a point of this podcast. No man should ever strike his child, boy or girl, and especially girls. You should never, ever spank your child, boy or girl, ever, ever, as a man or woman. Should you ever repeat the way the slaves were treated by the master? Never should you ever beat your child. Put your hand on your child. Whoop them with a belt. Anything. No way should you ever strike a child. If you lose the patience to communicate with a human being, then you need to think a moment. You need to get away and go in another room. Leave the house. Take a ride someplace. But you should never, ever lose patience with another human being, especially a child, a man child or a woman child, and put your hand on them, beating them, or in any kind of way, especially a female child. Because you don't want a child, a man should never, ever strike a female child, because you don't want a female to grow up thinking that it's okay for a man to abuse her and physically, you know, hit her. That's not where you want to raise a child. You want to raise her pure as the princess she is and the prince that he is. And we want to put all that we can into our children so that they can be our future tomorrow, and that they can be leaders, and that they can be managers, that they can be owners of businesses. And we want them to be overcome the things that we have had to deal with. And we want them to be homeowners. We want them to be everything that they can be in this world successfully. And when we beat our children, and we call, I beat his ass, or I beat her ass. What? What is that? Something you want to be proud of? Beating on your child? You know, but how did it feel when you got beat? Or how did it feel when your man beat you? You know, did you internalize that and start accepting that? Because when I hear women go, I beat his ass, I go, and what did that do? Well, let me just tell you something. I've been beat in every kind of way as a child. I remember my dad whooping me with a battery cable, the kind of cables that you hook up from one car to another to power them up. I've been beat with switches. I've been beat with belts. I've been literally, he used to hit me right in the mouth with his fist as a man, my own brother. And I'm saying I've been physically abused in every kind of way. And whippings never did shit to me, but make me more hateful. It made me the volatile person that I am today. And when somebody today, or outside my father, outside my house, when they try to put their hands on me in any kind of way, I demolished them. And right today, I have that same anger and that same hate at anyone who try to do anything to me. I think about all the beatings and the whippings that I've had before, and I refuse to allow it to happen again. So I'm telling you, as a grown-ass man, 66 years old, whipping your child, especially a female child or a male child, and no exceptions, okay, to this rule, no one should pass on corporate punishment and beating their children. It's absolutely ludicrous, and it should be disbanded. It should be a law. And I'm not saying child abuse. Everybody talking about, well, back in the day, and you see it all the time on Facebook. Well, back in the day, I'm glad my parents was abusive to me as a child, because that's what made me the woman or the man that I am today. No, that's bullshit. The facts of the matter is, you know, you came up beaten, getting whoopings and stuff because your parents didn't know no better. Okay, because that's all they knew, because that's the age old slavery kind of thinking. And we have to watch having that slave mentality and how that virtually keeps us anchored or handcuffed to a way that we should basically do away with. And so moving on, I want to make this point because it's a very crucial point. Don't beat your children. There's no such thing as spanking. And I hear people say, well, you know, she putting her hand, she turned on the stove and she playing with the stove and that's dangerous. Or, you know, she's sticking something in the socket and I don't want her to get shot. Well, hell, you got to talk to her. You got to talk to him. You got to use English language. But if a baby is a baby and can't speak and don't even know one word of the English language, you cannot put your hand on them. They don't even understand. And you slapping them or hitting them, they're going to look at you like, what'd I do? I mean, come on now. You're going to hurt that child. Your emotional stability is important in a human being. And you have to cherish their emotional stability. And you don't want them to grow up hateful like I did. You don't want them to grow up, you know, thinking, you know, because see what a child will do? They'll start throwing things. When they get mad, they'll have temper tantrums. And you say, oh, you're laughing at that. But you're teaching the child how to do that when you hit them. Okay? But now, if you scold them with a little bit stern voice,